Today is Saturday, 21st September 2024, and it is the 150th session of Mindfulness for Beginners in English conducted by Nisalanumanayan Forest Monastery. I'd like to welcome Venerable Homagama Dhammakusva Thero for this session. We'd also like to welcome everyone who's joining via Zoom, Facebook live stream, and who may be watching later. Our program, as usual, will commence with in-session practice of mindfulness and followed by a talk on today's topic, which is interdependence, by Bante. And once we finish that, we will then present any of the reports received by any of our listeners who sent to us. We will present them to Bante for his feedback. And lastly, if we have time, we will allow for any questions. So to begin the session, as according to the agenda, the first is in-session practice of mindfulness. I hand over to Venerable Bante.
Thanks, Sonali. Hello, everyone. Today, I thought maybe we can do a walking session to start the session program. So all of us, let's join for a mindful walking session. I'll give you some guidance in case you are new here. We select some space where we can walk comfortably. Probably like 10-15 steps would do. Once you have selected this space, walk in a comfortable manner and try to be mindful of the walking. When you try it for a while, you start to feel the walking body, maybe the sensations at your feet, the texture, temperature, which parts of your heel is touching the ground, those things you can feel while walking. So what we try to do is we try to be mindful of our steps and try to continue the walking process. Time to time, we get carried away by thoughts, surrounding sounds, sights. We get carried away, but we can realize and we can return back to the walking. Again, be mindful of your steps. So this way, time after time, we get distracted, but we realize it. We return our attention back to the walking. So this way, we can practice mindful walking for a few minutes. I invite all of you to join for a walking session. Okay, everyone, now you can return back to your seats. That's our time to do mindful walking today. This is just to give you an idea so you can practice on your own. With that, Sonali, you can take over.
Thank you, Bhante. Next on the agenda is the talk on today's topic, which is interdependence. And I invite Bhante to start today's topic.
Hello, everyone. Today we have a nice topic, which is based on one of the quotes or ideas from a cartoon. I think it's a popular cartoon from our childhood. It's about Tom and Jerry. The quote says, Tom and Jerry are actually friends. Now, if you know the cartoon, if you have watched it, you know that they are always fighting. They are always trying to, you know, harm each other, trying to kill each other. So that way, they behave in the cartoon, right? But in actuality, it says that Tom and Jerry are actually friends. Why are we saying that? What is the reasoning for this quote or the idea? Now, if you really watch that cartoon, you might realize when the owners are not there, the two guys, Tom and Jerry, they are relaxing, they are behaving like friends. But when the owners are back at home, they fight, trying to kill each other, right? So that gives us an idea that Tommy is not really trying to kill Jerry, but he is pretending to kill Jerry. In the other way, the Jerry doesn't hate Tom, but instead they pretend to do this. Why? Because let's say if the owners knew that Tommy is faking, right? If the owners knew that he is not trying to kill Jerry, then what will happen? He will be replaced by another cat. So his livelihood depends on trying to kill Jerry. But he is not actually doing it. He's just pretending, trying to kill him, and just showing the owners that he's doing his job. Right, in the other way, let's say another cat comes, then he might actually kill Jerry. So Jerry also wants Tom to be there, making sure that he doesn't get killed in the process. Right, so both of them, they work together to do this show or to create this smoke screen. So the owners think that Tommy is actually trying, and they are fighting, they are trying to kill each other. Jerry is, you know, participating in the process. So they create this smoke screen just to make sure that their livelihood is preserved, right? So that's the reality between this cartoon. If you really watch it, you get to realize it, that these guys are actually friends. So you can see both of them, their livelihood or their life is dependent on each other, right? Tom needs Jerry. In the other way, Jerry needs Tom. If another cat comes, that cat will kill Jerry, right? If Tom shows that he's actually liking Jerry, then he might get replaced. So in the process, they appear like they are the opposites. They appear like they are hating each other. But in reality, they are friends. They depend on each other. That's how they survive, right? So this is a simple idea from a childhood cartoon. But we can really link it to the life that we live in or to the practice that we are doing. Let's say most of you, I think you have seen this sign. Sometimes we call it the Kung Fu sign, that circle with a dark part and a light part, right? So that circle, it's called the yin and yang, yin yang, right? That's the name of it, right? So you can see a dark part there. You can see a light part there, right? It appears like two fishes chasing each other, right? Something like that, it appears. So when you look at this sign, you can see that a dark is opposite of the light part, right? Just for the look of it, it appears that these two extremes are opposites. These two extremes are opposites. But in reality, let's say if there is no dark patch, if the dark patch disappears, then along with that, the white part too will disappear. Right? The dark part is giving the shape to the white part. Right? So this is called yin yang. Yin and yang. These two signs, they depend on each other. The dark part can't survive without the light part. The light part can't survive without the dark part. If one disappears, along with that, the other one also disappearing, right? So that's yin yang. You can see how both light and dark, both the parts are interdependent on each other. They are interdependent, right? That's how they appear. If one disappears, then along with that, the other one also disappearing. So you can see how interdependent these things are, right? So same goes for the life or the reality. Let's say without light, can we establish darkness? Right? Let's say night time, daytime, we say. Now here it's midday. For some other country, it's early morning. So that way we say, this is nighttime, this is daytime. But without the daytime, can we establish a nighttime? Then we don't see a difference. All we see is darkness, right? So there is no difference. Without light, we can't establish the darkness, right? So that's there. Let's say even when it comes to our senses, when we are mindful, we get to feel our senses, sense doors, we say, right? While mindfully walking, we feel our steps. We try to continue our attention with the steps. While mindfully sitting, we try to continue our attention with the breathing. But when you do this, you get to realize how other sense doors, how they are working. That too, you are experiencing little by little, right? For example, let's say the sounds that we experience, the sounds that we feel. It appears like we are reading only the sounds. But in reality, if there is no silence, how can we read the sounds, right? If there's no silence, we won't be able to feel the sounds. Why? Because compared to silence only, we are feeling the sounds that are there. Only compared to the silence, we can feel it. So you can see how silence and sounds, how they are interdependent. Without one, the other can't survive. Right? So when it comes to hearing something, it's a mixture of sound versus silence that we hear. If there was sound all the time, then we won't feel any meaning in it. We can't differentiate it. Right? Always when somebody is speaking, It's a combination of sound and silence. When you hear something, it's a combination of sound and silence. So you can see without the one, the other can't survive. Let's say our bodily feelings, let's say the breath, right? When you observe breath, initially it is hard to catch. But little by little, you develop the ability and you are able to catch your ingoing, outgoing breath. And when you feel this, you realize, okay, now I feel the breathing. Now the breathing is not there. Now again, I feel the breathing. That way, there's a gap in between in-breath and out-breath. Always there's a gap, right? So without this gap, can we experience these sensations? Only compared to the gap, we are experiencing the breath. It's always a combination. That's why initially when you are mindful, your attention goes to the breathing, the sensation. But little by little, when you practice for some time, you get to feel the emptiness in between or the gap in between. You realize there's a gap in between the in-breath and the out-breath. Because of that gap only, you are feeling these sensations. So you can see these sensations that we experience, they are always on and off. A mixture of both things. They are interdependent. Without one, the other can't survive. Let's say when we practice, we feel the solid nature in us. Let's say otherwise, let's say fullness. Sometimes we feel fullness, right? But when mindfully, when we do it, gradually we start to feel the emptiness as well. Sometimes it's full, sometimes it's empty. There's always this combination, a mixture of these two. Usually the beginner, they are always in the fullness. That's how their attention goes. They say everything is full. I feel so much crowded. That's how the usual worldly mind is. But gradually, when they keep on practicing, when they do their mindfulness daily, gradually they start to feel the emptiness as well. Right? Little by little, the attention slips off to the emptiness. And you start to feel the emptiness. But you can realize this entire experience is always a combination of fullness and emptiness. It's a combination, it's a mixture. Without the one, other can't survive. Right? So this way, everything, the world, the reality that we are experiencing, it's always interdependent. Without one, the other can't survive. Same goes for the good and evil in this world. We always think that good should be there, evil should be banished. That's what we think. But in reality, without evil, can we establish good in this world? It's like that Tom and Jerry cartoon, you know. Tom, let's say, is the good part. He represents the light. Then Jerry, he's the dark part. He represents the darkness, right? So without Jerry, Tom can't survive. Without Tom, Jerry can't survive. So both of them are needed in that place. So same goes for the worldly things. When you establish good, along with that, you establish evil. Now, this, I think one of the movies, Batman movie, that also represents this idea, right? That Batman is trying to, you know, make everything good, right? He wants the world to be good. But in the process, he's creating the Joker, evil, right? It's in the process, he's creating. So you can see how evil is dependent on the good. If you try to establish that something is good, then as a result, you establish evil as well, right? So this is how the world functions. Now, as mindful practitioners, the idea is to realize the interdependent nature of these things. If we don't realize it, then usually we are fighting one while embracing the other. That's how we usually function. We think that there should be only good in this world. The evil shouldn't be there. We say that silence should be there, not the sounds. We say that emptiness is better, but not the fullness. So that way, we try to attach to one while suppressing or hating the other. Right? So that's the worldly mind. But in reality, when we practice mindfulness, we can see the interdependent nature. We can see how sounds are dependent on silence. How fullness is dependent on emptiness. How light is dependent on darkness. Right? That openness we are developing in the mindful practice. We are not trying to see it. We are not trying to see the interdependent nature. Instead, we practice this openness in our mind. Mindfulness is being open to the experience. Initially, you might not feel it, but little by little, you realize it's simply being present, being open to the experience. That's all. And when you are open, when you are being present, then you get to realize, you get to feel the reality. Reality always interdependent like this. Dark is interdependent on light. Space is interdependent on emptiness. That good is interdependent on evil. So this way, these things are interdependent. That nature you get to realize in the practice. That is the very idea. You are open to this experience, and when you are open, you can see how the sounds are replaced by silence. How the fullness is replaced by emptiness. How the breath is replaced by the gap in between. Right? So that way your mind starts to see the opposite extreme. Usually the worldly mind, it doesn't see both things. It doesn't see both extremes. Instead, it is usually caught in one. Let's say some people, they are caught in good while hating evil. Some people, they are caught in fullness while not knowing that there is emptiness. Right? So this way, our mind is usually caught in one of these states. But when you practice this openness in mind, when you keep on practicing mindfulness, little by little, you get to feel how these things are interdependent. How good is dependent on evil, like Tom and Jerry. How fullness is dependent on emptiness. How sounds are dependent on silence. So this way, little by little, we get to experience it. In practice, if you read those, if you listen to those meditation reflection reports, if you listen to them, always the beginners are trying to say that this shouldn't be there. They say that I need one of these states. I don't need both of them. I need only good. I don't need evil in this world. I need emptiness. I don't like fullness in this world. That way, usually the beginners, their mind is caught in one. Right? The very beginners, they are caught in the fullness or the sounds or the good. That way they are caught. Right? Little by little, when they practice for a while, when they mature in the practice, they start to prefer emptiness over fullness. they start to prefer silence over sounds. They start to prefer good over evil, right? That way, the worldly mind is usually stuck in one. The meditators, they say only good should be there. Only silence should be there. Only emptiness I have to experience. That way they are saying. But in meditation reports, if you listen to the advice that's given, usually the advice is to explain that both of these things are interdependent. You can't have good without evil. You can't have emptiness without fullness. You can't have sounds without silence. So that way, we keep on discussing and keep on practicing. Little by little, our mind will accept the reality as it is. It is always a mixture of sounds and silence. It's always a mixture of fullness and emptiness. It's always a mixture of good and evil. That reality, if you can't accept, then you won't be able to deal with this world. You will always be stressful. You are trying to fight one while trying to protect the other. That's not gonna work, because in reality, in actuality, it's always a combination of these two. Right? So when you practice for a while, when you keep on practicing, you start to experience this in your mind. You try to protect your precepts. You try to follow the moral code. But sometimes you realize you can't always protect them. You break them and the blaming game happens. The beginners, they blame a lot. They say that I can't do these things. I am breaking these precepts. They are always in a blaming game. But you have to be compassionate towards oneself and keep on practicing. And with time, you realize sometimes these things, they break. You can't always keep the precepts. Sometimes they break. And when they break, how long will it take for you to recover from that damage? That's the important thing. How long will it take for you to recover from that blaming game? In reality, it's the resilience of your mind. You fall down, but soon you are recovered. You make mistakes. How long it takes for you to recover, right? If it is too long, then probably your practice is not correct, right? So in reality, it's always a combination of these things. Good and evil, it's a combination. Sounds and silence, it's a combination. Emptiness and fullness, it's a combination. So with practice, with some time, when you mature in your practice, then you get to feel that how these things are interdependent. And when you feel the interdependent nature, little by little, your mind will start to accept both the extremes. Your mind will start to accept the both the extremes, good and evil. Your mind starts to accept fullness and emptiness. Your mind starts to accept both sounds and silence. That is important. That is important. That's why we have to discuss this again and again. Usually your mind is not welcome in these things. You have to tell them it's good that you kept practicing. But sometimes you have to end that practice. Go back to the world. Live in that world. Right? You have to do your duties. You have to do your responsibilities. Some people, they say that I want to continue my sitting session. I don't want to get up. It's good that you are sitting. It's good that you are practicing. But maybe 40 minutes, 1 hour, you have to get up, go back to your life again. They want to stay in the walking forever, walking practice. That they don't like to get out of the walking path. But you have to tell them, it's okay, it's good that you are walking. If you can do 1 hour of mindful walking, but at the end of that, you have to go back to your daily life. They come to a monastery. They stay here for some time. And they don't want to leave. They don't want to go back to their homes. But you have to tell them, it's good that you stayed for 10 days or so in a monastery. It's good that you practiced it. But now you have to go back home, right? Go to the home, stay some time there, then come back again. That change, usually our mind is refusing. It is saying, I only need the practice. I don't like my usual life. I only need emptiness. I don't like this fullness. I only need good. I don't like evil. I want to stay in a monastery. I don't like this crowded, busy life. But in reality, both of them are interdependent. You have to go through those experiences and keep on practicing your mindfulness. Awareness, being mindful, that's all you have to do. That's all you have to do. Then time to time you realize there's a resistance in your mind. Maybe you don't like to go to work. You prefer emptiness or you prefer that calmness in mind. You don't like to stop your meditation. You prefer that calmness in your mind. That way you can feel some resistance. When something is good, your mind is attracted towards that. When something is bad, your mind is rejecting that, right? So you can see the likes and dislikes are there. We call them likes and dislikes, right? So when you are mindful in your daily life, you can always experience this. Maybe when you go for your walking session, there are likes in your mind. When you exit your walking session, dislikes might be there. When you experience good in this world, you like it. When you experience bad in this world, there's this dislikes in your mind. So this way, we keep on practicing and notice how these likes and dislikes are in our mind, how they are changing when you go through different experiences. That's one of the important aspects of practice. When you mature into the practice, you can see likes and dislikes in this mind. That's the proper level of practice when you continue for some time. You have to always experience what are the likes and dislikes in my mind. What experiences I am liking. What experiences I am disliking. That way, being mindful is the way. Let's say sometimes you get sick. Right? Sickness we don't like. We prefer being healthy. So we try to gulp down a whole lot of pills and somehow try to get better. Because we are hating the current condition. Right? But the practitioner, they can see how your mind is resisting this current condition. Your body is aching, paining. You have this feverish nature. So how your mind is resisting it, right? When you recover, how fresh you will feel in your mind, how your mind is liking that recovery. So this way, we try to experience likes and dislikes in the process. Sometimes, let's say, troubles come, problems come, right? Most people, they prefer staying problem-free. That's their philosophy. They say, I want to spend my time problem-free. But can that happen? Is that the reality? That question you have to ask, right? Usually living means sometimes the problems, worries, sadness, various things come. People do things that you don't like. Things happen in this world, right? So when the problems come, we don't like to go through them. We don't like the disturbed mind. We prefer calmness. We prefer end of this problem. But the proper advice is to, you know, try to live with the problem. Try to be with it. You have to develop that ability. See the dislikes in your mind for this state. Right? Your mind is preferring troubleless nature. But in reality, you can't maintain that. Sometimes the problems come. When they come, you have to see the resistance in your mind, the dislikes in your mind. If you keep on practicing like that, then what happens is that you are progressing in your practice. Gradually, these likes and dislikes, they will reduce in intensity. Now, even a few days ago, somebody was telling me that this place has lot of problems. So I should go to some other place where there are no problems. That way, this person is saying, right? This place has a lot of problems. These people are making a lot of trouble. So I should go to some other place where there are no problems. That was his idea. But is there such a place? A place without problems, right? Can you find it? Right? That's the question that you have to ask. Some people think that they can find. They keep on looking, but still, at the end of the day, they find some problems. Then again, they go to a fresh place and think that here I have no problems. But in reality, you can't find a place in the outside. A place without problems, you can't find in the outside. What you have to do is, you have to make sure that your mind is problem-free. When your mind is problem-free, then the outside problems will fade away. It's the problems in your mind that is creating this mess. It reminds me Achancha's simile. He's saying a person who is traveling, he goes to a certain place. He sits down. He spends some time. But he gets to experience this bad odor. So he is blaming the surrounding. He is blaming other people, saying, "You are making this bad odor. I'm going some other place. This is no place to stay." He is blaming and leaving. He goes to a fresh place. Then sit down there. After a while, again, he starts to feel that bad odor. Right? He's again blaming the surrounding and the people, going for a fresh place. He does this time after time. But at the end of the day, each and every place starts to smell. Right? So where is this bad odor is coming from? Actually, it's in his backpack. He's having some bad thing, something rotten in his backpack. So wherever he goes, he feels that rotten smell. Right? Whatever the place he is in, it is smelly. Whatever the people he deals with, it's giving that bad odor. In reality, it's his own problem, not the surrounding, not the other people. Right? So that's the reality in this world. You think that others are making trouble. You think that this person hates me. You think that if this person isn't there, I'll be happy. I'm miserable of this person. I am miserable of this marriage. I am miserable of because of my children. That way you think. But in reality, you are miserable because your mind is miserable, not because of the outside conditions. So you have to change that mind. Only by changing that mind, you will be less miserable, right? How to change it? This is the very practice. This is the very practice. Now somebody was sharing their mindful experience with me a couple of days ago. And that person was saying, I was back in the day, maybe like 1 year ago, that person is saying, I was furious all the time, hating everybody, hating my family members, hating my workplace, hating the strangers that I meet in the road. I was always furious. I thought it's the other people's problem, it's my family problems, it's my spouse, it's my workplace, it's the strangers. That's how I thought. But about a year back, I started practicing mindfulness. Now I am feeling my mind is creating this mess. Still the mind is creating it. Still the mind is creating the mess. But at least now I know. That is what this person is saying. When I am angry, now I know that my mind is angry. When I am frustrated, now I know that my mind is frustrated. When I am jealous, now I know that my mind is jealous. That very knowing is established. The knowing is established as a result of the practice. Maybe months and years worth of practice. But still, as a result, that knowing is established in your mind. That is the very Buddha nature. One time, the Buddha was asked, who are you? Are you a human? Are you some celestial being? Are you a devil? That type of a questioning. Buddha says no to everything. No to everything. I'm not a human. I'm not a celestial being. He says no to everything. Then that person asks, how should I know you? Then the Buddha says, just pure awareness. Pure awareness. So that knowing, that's all. That's all. Right? So in your mind also, you have to make sure that knowing is established. That takes few months, few years of practice for you to establish that knowing in your mind. But still, it's worthwhile doing that. It's worthwhile spending that time, the energy practicing, making sure that you're establishing this knowing in your mind. When you're angry, you will know anger is still there. It won't go away. The thoughts are still there. It won't go away. The jealousy or the frustrations, still there. They won't go away. But what is the change? You will know that knowing is established in your mind. That knowing will protect you. It will do marvels in your life. You know that you're angry. You know that you're frustrated. You know that you're jealous. That very knowing is what we need. Right? That's why we say when you go through these experiences, when you go through this interdependent nature, try to notice the likes and dislikes. Those likes and dislikes represent how much you are resisting this interdependence. That resistance is a good measure of your practice. It's an indicator of the progress of your practice. If you are resisting a lot in your mind, then your practice is not matured. Right? If you are accepting whatever that happens, more acceptance is there in your mind, then we can say your practice has matured. Always noticing the likes and dislikes in the process. When these interdependence come, when sound is replaced by silence, when fullness is replaced by emptiness, when sensations are replaced by the gap, when good is replaced by evil, how much you are resisting likes and dislikes, right? So what we suggest is when you reach a certain level of practice, you have to make sure that you are practicing as long as you are awake, you are practicing. As long as you are living, you are practicing. What is your practice? Go through your daily life, go through these experiences and notice likes and dislikes. Notice how you are suppressing certain things at a time. Notice how you are embracing certain things at a time. Right? So that way, sometimes you hate going to work. So dislikes are there. Right? You don't like to deal with certain people. When you see them, just the sight of them will make you irritated. So dislikes are there. Some things make you happy. The liking is there, likes are there. So this way, when you go through sickness and health, when you go through troubles, when you go through difficult people, you can really experience the level of your practice. If you are accepting more and more, if your mind is more and more flexible, then that is a sign that your practice has matured. The real problem you are addressing. The real problem is internal, not in the outside world. We try to blame the outside world, but in reality, the real problem is internal, right? So if you are addressing the real problem, you should feel that the likes and dislikes are reducing. Your mind is more flexible, accepting the experience of living, right? So today's idea is try to see this interdependent nature. Try to make sure that you are practicing as long as awake. As long as you are awake, you are practicing. Whenever you go through these experiences, notice likes and dislikes in your mind. Those are the reactions that will tell you how much of acceptance is there, how much your practice has matured. You can really feel with these likes and dislikes. That's all I have to say for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bhante. That was a very good talk. And we have some homework, as you say, for next week to notice these things. And next on the agenda is the Q&A session as well as the reports to present to Bhante. I invite Samantha to present this week's reports and conduct the Q&A. Over to you, Samantha.
Thank you, Sonali. Thank you, Bhante, Avasarai Bhante. Thank you also for that amazing talk, Bhante. Certainly got me thinking what I need to do during the day. So we've got two reports which I'll read soon. But before I go on to reading the reports, I'd just like to remind everyone, especially any newcomers to the program, that in the chat you'll find Nisara Varna has set up a basic guidance on how to meditate and submit your experiences in a report form to Bhante. I think, they're all in the chat now. So Bhante will then give valuable guidance and advice how to progress in your meditation. You can see there are two helpful links put together by Nisarana Vanir, and both on mindful walking and mindful sitting. You can allocate some time for the practice daily, starting with walking and then sitting and gradually building up to 2 hours a day. Then please submit your experiences, both mindful walking and the sitting, to Bhante for advice. There's an example in the chat how you can do this. For example, if walking you can describe any prominent feature, sensation, texture of the ground, pressure points of the soles, and how you move shifted, how the body shifted, the weight shifted. Similarly, in the sitting meditation, again, you can refer to any prominent sensations in your report, how the incoming and the outgoing of the breath, at the nostrils was experienced, rising of the abdomen, etc. So if you write down all your experiences and also your experiences during the day, and then submit the report, so then in the session, Bhante will give valuable guidance for your own practice, and how to progress in your meditation. You can send these reports as per in the link, either on Google Form or by email using the link provided in the chat. So this is a very good opportunity to get personal guidance from Bhante and continue with your mindfulness practice during the week according to the advice given for your own report writing during the session in along with your meditation practice. Finally, the recordings of the session are available at the link given in the chat. So now I'll go on to read the two reports that's been submitted to Bhante. So the first one is mindfulness during the day. Being on holiday overseas for 1 week, there was no formal sitting or walking practice during the time. However, there were many opportunities for being mindful. Sharing with the 14-hour, sorry, starting with the 14-hour flight, instead of feeling impatient, the mind was uplifted due to the chance of being here now and not having to do anything such as daily chores or professional tasks. In the confined space of flight, the mind felt free. Noted again that mind is not confined to physical space, hence can be free if allowed to be free. Notice the behavior during the breakfast buffet at the hotel. After scanning the variety of food around the hall, remembering the consequence of overeating and mixing too many types of food with one meal, lost interest in many of the dishes. Chose some wholesome yet delicious options, but did not overdo it. Remember having enough energy to walk and climb while sightseeing because of not overeating. Although it was not formal walking practice, there was the opportunity to walk mindfully in a Zen Buddhist temple at night. Husband was busy taking pictures, and while walking in that pristinely organized temple grounds, it felt like time slowed down. So many tourists and locals around, but the walking up and down was not disturbed. Dear Bhante, look forward to your valuable feedback. Much merit to you, Theruvan Saranai. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Okay, now first I noticed that you made the comment saying that although the formal practice you couldn't do, there were a lot of opportunity to practice during that time, right? So that's important. That's the truth. That's what we mentioned even during today's talk. We have a lot of opportunities to practice, opportunities to be mindful. So you can't always do the formal meditation, but still you can continue the practice. Right? That's what we have to say. Most people, they think that meditation is sitting only. They don't even like the walking meditation. They say if you are meditating, sitting, that's all. You have to sit cross-legged. That's how you can meditate. That's what most people think. But in this mindful practice, we introduce not only sitting, but we introduce walking as well. We say both are formal meditations. But with time, when you practice for a while, we tell you that as long as you are awake, you have the opportunity to practice. Simply being mindful. Whatever the activity that you are doing, you could be traveling. You could be traveling in a busy plane, but still, you can practice. You could be traveling in a busy airport, but still you can practice. You could be eating something at a breakfast buffet. Still, you could practice. So that way, as long as you are living, you can practice. That is the real practice. That is a real practice. Otherwise, usually people do a sit-in session, a walking session in their daily life. And for the rest of the day, they forget the practice. Let's say you are awake 18 hours, you do 1.5 hours of formal practice, and for the remaining 16.5 hours, your mind is utterly lost. So will that practice work? That's the issue. Most people do this type of practice for so many years, and they, at the end of the day, they come and say, I have practiced for so many years, but the practice doesn't work for me. Why? Because 16 and a half hours, you are practicing unmindfulness while practicing 1.5 hours of mindfulness. It's not enough. That's what you have to do. You have to make sure as long as you're awake, you're practicing. You can't be mindful all the time. That is fine. That is acceptable. Right? But again and again, remind yourself to be mindful. Try to go through the experience. Try to go through it wholeheartedly. That's all you have to do. Right? So that's one thing I noticed. Then the second one, that selecting meals and, you know, eating a balanced meal, that type of idea, it's always a balancing act. Right? You have to enjoy the trip. You have to make sure that you are enjoying the hikes or traveling. But if you eat too much, then you won't be able to enjoy that part. Right? So you have to make sure you have to do this balancing act. You have to make sure that you are enjoying the meals as well as you are enjoying the traveling part. If you try to enjoy meals too much, then you will get fed up during the traveling part. You will feel sleepy. Your stomach is too full, disturbed, right? That's not good, right? So it's always a balancing act. That's how we can, you know, enjoy this world. You may remember the story about that oil spoon. I think I mentioned it number of times. That boy, young boy, he goes to this wise sage, and he asked him, what is the secret of happiness? This sage is living in a mansion, a beautiful, colorful lot of things in there. So he says, I am busy at the moment. You go and you see the mansion and come back. When you return, I'll tell you the secret. When the boy was ready to leave, he gave him a spoonful of oil and said that you have to make sure that you are not dropping the oil spoon when you do this. So the boy was too self-centered, you know, he was too self-conscious with the spoon. He tried to make sure that he's not dropping the spoon of oil. And somehow went around the mansion and returned back to the sage. The sage was asking, and he gave the oil spoon. He returned it, saying that I protected your spoon of oil. Then sage asked, how was the mansion? Was it beautiful? Then the boy was saying that I couldn't see, I couldn't notice the beauty because I was too self-concerned, you know, self-conscious of this spoon full of oil. Then the wise man gives the spoon back to him saying go back again, try to enjoy the traveling as well, try to enjoy the mansion as well. This time boy was looking around, went to the beautiful garden, saw the flowers, animals there, enjoyed everything and returned. And he says, it's a beautiful mansion. I have seen everything. You have a beautiful garden. All the flowers are very nice. That way he is talking. Then the wise man asked, where's the spoonful of oil? Now no oil is left. Even the spoon is missing. Why? Because he forgot that part. So the wise man says, the secret of happiness is making sure that you are enjoying the world while not forgetting the spoon full of oil in your hand. That is the balancing act he is suggesting, right? You can go out and enjoy the world, but make sure that you are not forgetting yourself, right? So that's the reality. That's how you can live this life. You don't have to always, you know, be self-conscious. You can enjoy the world. You can go out, you know, you can see the beautiful scenery, eat delicious food. That is fine. But make sure that you are not forgetting yourself. That's the balancing act. If you have that balance, if you go through this learning process, there's always a learning curve for this balancing act. You have to go through that process. And when you go through, you realize you find happiness in this world. Right, that's the important thing. Then third thing I want to mention, that a lot of people, when you go to a temple, they have certain ideas. Some of them take pictures, some of them, you know, worshipping, some of them expecting blessings. Various ideas are there. But for the meditator, it's a beautiful opportunity to meditate. And you realize a lot of people, crowds are there. But still, your meditation is not disturbed. That is the proper meditation. Otherwise, we think that because of the crowd, we can't do. We think that we should go and, you know, seek for the blessings. But this is the greatest blessing. What else can Buddha give you? Right? This is the greatest gift. The practice of meditation. There's nothing greater. So it doesn't matter whether you are at a monastery, whether you are at a temple, whether you are at home, you have received it. So you can just embrace that gift that was given to you. Right? Thank you for sharing. Keep on practicing. It doesn't matter where you are. As long as you are awake, you can do it.
Thank you, Bhante. So the second question, it's on sitting meditation. The primary object is watching the breath. Watched in and out breath, which soon broke up. Mind observed a nod of head, but not asleep. Minimal thoughts, not much to recall from the sitting session of 45 minutes. So now the daily mindfulness, aware of mind focusing, listening to a couple of sermons, and at times when distraction took place. Mind came back spontaneously three times, but needed to rewind parts when proliferations took place. Mind better at recognizing earlier in the process when irritation and anger arising. This week, less episodes of negative reactions when situations did not go in the preferred manner. Much gratitude to Bhante and organizers. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Samantha, sorry, can you repeat that report?
Yeah. Yes, I was. So shall I do bit by bit? The sitting
report.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, Bhante. So the first one is on sitting meditation. The primary object is watching the breath. Watched in and out breath, which soon broke up. Mind observed a nod of head, but not asleep. Minimal thoughts, Not much to recall from the sitting session of 45 minutes. So next one is daily mindfulness. Aware of mind focusing, listening to a couple of sermons, and at times when distractions took place, mind came back spontaneously 3 times, but needed to rewind parts when proliferations took place. Mind better at recognizing earlier in the process when irritation and anger arising. This week, less episodes of negative reactions when situations did not go in the preferred manner. Much gratitude to Bhante and the organizers. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Okay, thanks. Now, when we think about that sitting practice, you say that not much to recall after the sitting, but consider that as a good sign. For a beginner, we say try to gather all the information, but gradually when the practice matures, you realize that you are experiencing, you are mindful, but it doesn't go to memory that much. Not much to recall after 1 hour of sitting. So that 1 hour, your mind is utterly peaceful. That's why you couldn't recall anything, right? So appreciate that change. Know that this is how the practice will progress, that you are there, you are mindful, but afterwards there is nothing much to recall. That's a positive sign. Then those lesser number of negative episodes in your daily life, negative reaction episodes, right? So things happen outside world, negative things happen, or the things that we say negative or bad. People do certain things that happens, but in your mind, less negative reactions are there. Those are the likes and dislikes that we mentioned earlier. So when you keep on observing your likes and dislikes, when you keep on establishing that knowing in your mind, right? When you establish that knowing in your mind, that very knowing will get rid of these negative reactions, or they will lose power. The negative reactions will lose the power they had on you, right? Because you are not identifying with these negative reactions as yourself. With that knowing, you are not identifying with these different states, reactions, right? That's why you feel lesser number of reactions, negative reactions in your mind. So that's a good sign. But it is not always, you know, an upward trend. Sometimes temporary, it goes down. Again, it goes up. Again, it goes down. This way only it is having the trend. It's always an upward trend, but it is not a straight line going up and down like this, and it is progressing. So next week might have some negative episodes, but still know that it is temporary. Keep on practicing, keep on establishing that knowing in your mind. That's all you have to do. And with time, maybe in few months, few years, you realize that the practice has worked.
Thank you, Bhante. We've just got another report, Bhante. Can I read that one, please?
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yeah, thank you, Bhante. Theruvan Saranai, Bhante. Walking, sitting, and day-to-day activities all are like one without their margin. Checking the nature of experience was tiring. Even though there was no urge to write reports, kept presenting what came to be written, as the chief Bhante said to do so. Recently, a report was presented to Chief Bhante for the first time. I got a chance unexpectedly to talk to the Chief Bhante, even though I was not prepared. Felt like things going blank in canvas kind mode. Anyhow, after that incident, I felt like a heavy weight on me. it's not because of what the Bante told, but how I took things. Couldn't figure it out exactly because of this. The heaviness arise, but the heaviness, but the easiness was absent, which was like my home. There was acceptance, an uncomfortable feeling there. When I tried to figure out why, small pieces of things arose, as there was fear to talk to Bante and couldn't answer, as I felt blank-like when I was questioned. Felt guilty as trying to express the experience via a report when there is no urge to write a report. But as I noticed so far, there is a lesson to be learned when things hurt and feel uncomfortable. It felt like somewhere stuck and normal energy flow was blocked, like. Sat for sitting with heaviness and let it be. Then it arose as this is not the home. The experience of canvas becoming fully blank and going to next was no more. Even things fading were not noticeable. It was like fading away to go back home. Being with heaviness slightly started appearing, things fading in background. Slowly the witness was jumping from things fading away to the heaviness. Again, back to things fading away. Gradually, he started being with things fading away. Then slowly started to experience the home, like a flow not carrying any. In another way, like canvas, fully deleting when it goes from one thing to another. Then that also gradually became a blur. Can't separate anything, but no worries. Even things fading are not relevant anymore. Not like other natures. Even a thing comes in between this piece is not shaken. Actually, it can be experienced, but can't be expressed. Felt no more struck like early. Even though the flow like experience isn't continuous, mostly no clear attempt to figure out what's going on, because checking what is tiring. It keeps changing in blur mode and can be noticed if seen nearly with more effort. Bante, Teruan Saranai. That's the end of the report, Bante.
Okay, thanks for sharing that experience. As you can see, always there's opportunity for you to, you know, learn something from the experience. And, you know, help your practice and somehow continue with the practice. Now, when I hear your report, you try to say that easiness in your mind, it is your home. But heaviness is foreign. You don't like it. That's the idea I got when I hear your report. But if you listen to today's talk, what we were trying to say is both heaviness and easiness, they are interdependent. Of course, you don't get to experience heaviness frequently. But when you experience, you try to get rid of it and go back to the easiness. That is the struggle in your report. You want to go get better. You want to go back to easiness. You want to go back home. Right? But in the practice, that's not the proper idea. Instead, let the heaviness be. When it is heavy, we know that due to the easiness, the heaviness comes. When it is easy, we know this will be replaced by easiness. Right? In your mind, these two are interdependent. If you expect only one, then you are going to suffer. Right? So that's why you have to make sure that these things are accepted in your mind. Again and again, the resistance is there, suppressing, but that resistance also you can notice in the practice. Notice the dislikes for the heaviness, right? With that, you can continue, and one day You become homeless. Homeless. That's the very idea. Neither the heaviness nor the easiness is your home. I'm again saying neither the heaviness nor the easiness is your home. Now you are trying to say the easiness is my home. But you have to become homeless. Right? That is the very idea of the practice, becoming homeless. If we consider something as home, then we are caught. The suffering will follow. That's the trouble. That's the danger in our lives. Somehow we try to find a home. That easiness, that's my home. The family members, that's my home. This place, it's my home. I need my friends, that's my home. I need the family environment, that's my home. That way we try to find a home. But if we have a home, then we are caught. Suffering will follow. Those people, they might depart. Those things will get distracted. Your peace will be disturbed. Right? When that happens, you suffer. But in practice, we try to become homeless. That is the very idea. In our mind, whether it's heaviness or easiness, neither of them we are accepting or making our home. When it is heaviness, heaviness is there. When it is easiness, easiness is there. Initially, you try to find the reasoning behind them. What is the cause of this heaviness? What is it? We are investigating. Sometimes you can find the reasoning. Sometimes you can find the cause. But most of the time, you can't really see what's the cause behind this heaviness. Maybe something we don't see. Difficult to figure. But the practitioner just experienced the heaviness for heaviness. Experience the easiness for easiness. That's the very practice. And when you do it, the causes for the heaviness or the easiness will be there, but you won't suffer over them. You won't suffer. You know that this is the nature of the mind. Heaviness is replaced by easiness. Easiness is replaced by heaviness. That interconnected nature is there. Today's topic, right? So it's time that you accept it and try to continue your practice that way.
Thank you, Bhante, for that valuable advice and talk. Now, we've just gone past 10 o'clock, so we haven't unfortunately got any time for questions, but you can save them up for next week. I'll hand over to Sonali to wrap up now. Thank you, Bhante. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Samantha, and thank you, Bhante. We have now come to the end of our session. We have some news to share with the forum, with the group today, about one of our major hosts, one of our organizers from the inception of this program. And he was an integral part of this program from the very first day. A familiar face to all of you who have been in this program from the beginning up until a few months ago, till when I took over to host the program. That was your host, our dear friend, our good Dhamma friend, Namantha Tantrike, has passed away. And I'm sure all of you will come together in passing on our merits from all of us together to over to him, for him to improve his path and to pass on all our merits. We'll take a moment and we will pass on these merits to him. And then on behalf of the organizers, I would like to thank Venerable Homagama Dhamma Kosala Thero for your guidance. Yes, Bhante.
Sorry, a word, please.
Yes, now, yes.
Yeah, Namantha's incident, it's good that we mention these things. This is for the living, not for the dead, right? Because now he continued for so many years from the beginning of the program. he continued supporting this and did most of the work, right? But he had this illness, not so old, I think somewhere around 50 or so years, I guess. Nadeep, what age?
I think he's only 43, Bhante.
43, okay,
yeah,
not
yeah,
even 50,
not
yeah.
That old.
Maybe even younger than you, I guess.
Yeah, he's younger, yes. Even though he lost his hair, he's a lot younger than me.
That's because of the cancer, I guess,
yeah.
Right? So you can see the uncertainty of life. Nothing is guaranteed for you, right? You don't know when it'll come, when your turn will be. That you don't know. So these things, they are good reflections for us. He was, you know, sick for some time. He was not sharing those details, but we got to know a little bit. And towards the end, he couldn't attend the programs. The cancer got, you know, more severe. And I think last Saturday was it, I guess, right? So during that time, it got worse. Even in the highest, you know, highest dose painkillers, he was recalling the program, asking whether somebody who is the person supporting today, whether they have managed it properly. That was his thought process. So maybe working on such a project for years on end, it helped him even during the last moment. He could recall that good deed that he has done. So that's something for us to learn, you know, even for us at your deathbed, you might come to a situation where you have to, you know, recall something. Maybe it'll be your family members, your properties. We don't know, right? That's the issue. That's the issue. Making a home in those things, right? Whatever it is, your home, you will recall that. Maybe your family, maybe your children, maybe your properties, maybe your professions, I don't know, right? So make sure that you are putting considerable priority, considerable weight towards the practice, towards some wholesomeness. So at least that'll come as your home. We don't know. We don't know. We have to go through the experience and see what comes to us. But the meditators know what is their home, right? In deep meditation, usually in sitting sessions, you can really feel what is my home? Where does my mind goes to, right? So that experience will tell you what will happen during your deathbed, right? That flow state kind of a, like losing control kind of a experience in meditation, that will tell you how your mind works. You are losing the grip of the mind and it naturally flows. When it flows, it goes to its home usually, right? So that type of a experience will tell you how your mind is behaving and where it finds its home, right? So this uncertainty is there in life. We don't know. Next week, it could be yours. Who knows, right? Are you guaranteed 8 years? Right? Do you have that guarantee? That's the issue. So Namanta is dead. This is teaching for the living, right? So you have to make sure that you are prioritizing your practice. You have to make sure that, you know, the knowing this uncertainty in life and not sure what will come. Nadeep could tell you maybe he has gone through extreme levels of pain during that last period. So that's the reality of this life. This is not a game. This is not a game. When that kind of time comes, it could be too late. We don't know what will come for us, right? What type of pain we'll have to experience. So it's better that you get prepared for it. Totally the meditation, the very idea of the practice is to get prepared. Die before you die. That's the very idea. We are meditating. You are dying before the deathbed. That is the very idea of meditation. Right? So make sure that you die before the death comes. Die before you die, otherwise you will scream, you will try to find a solution, you will go for doctors, you will cry, nothing will help, nothing will help, right? So good luck to the living people, that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Bhante, for those words. We needed to hear that. And yes, and on behalf of all the organizers, I'd like to thank Bhante Homagamadamukasilatero for his continued guidance on this program, as usual. And also the Chief Abbot of Nisarwanaya, Venerable Udayadeva Mahathero as well. May this merit help to improve their own practice as well. And thank you to all organizers who are making things happen behind the scene as well. And thank you to everyone who participated, sent us reports and commented on the program. Also, as usual, we will meet next week at Sri Lankan time, 1 p.m. for our program. And that is the end of the session. May you have all a happy and mindful week ahead. We will end the session now.